Welcome to Chronicles of a Medium. I'm your host, Maureen Hashi, psychic medium, intuitive healer. Join me for compelling conversations into true crime, mediumship, and everything in between. Today's episode is going to be very triggering for some. So if you are triggered by sexual trauma or generational abuse, now is the time to turn it off. Remove the children from the room because this is not a topic for children. Generational trauma and abuse is something that is widely known and often overlooked when it comes to adult coping mechanisms, and often lacks strategies for dealing with trauma effectively and healing on a cellular level because the wounds are so deep. And there's not a lot of help out there for families of the perpetrator. This can affect your own relationships with spouses, intimacy, and parenting. It can affect your work and your ability to hold a steady job. Even socializing and holding on to healthy friendships, you don't have the self-worth to cope in those situations and end up fulfilling a self-prophecy by self-sabotage. You don't know how to fix the programming that's gone on, or even to recognize it in the first place, until maybe many years later. Nothing changes until you're ready to face it. And oftentimes repressed memories surface after an event that took place that could be locked away for many, many years until you have the strength and ability to face it. Often people who have not gone through these experiences doubt that you've had a repressed memory. I know, because I was one of them. I used to say, how could you possibly not remember that? Oh, boy, life lessons, I tell ya. This is why people don't talk about their trauma and experiences, because they're afraid of what people will say and do. I know, because I've been both people. I doubt, and recently, a couple years ago, I had a repressed memory of a traumatic childhood experience that turned me upside down and inside out, and at the same time validated how I coped with fear and the level of vulnerability I felt, not just around certain men, but the time that my brother was charged with murder. I was ingrained with so much fear. The debilitating fear I had experienced robbed me of so many years of my life, that of precious time that I can't even, I think that is one thing I wished that it would surface earlier, but clearly I wasn't ready. When you least expect it, anything can trigger this memory to surface. For me, it was watching Crime Beat documentary on the anniversary of my brother's crimes, as his eligibility for parole was creeping up. It started with hearing for the first time he'd raped a child, a 14-year-old little girl, on her bike delivering newspapers. And in that moment, I could start to taste the air, and everything started to feel so real. On the screen, I saw a field, and suddenly I was on the riverbank, the St. John's River, Waterloo Row, Fredericton, New Brunswick, watching him kill eels under the bridge with rocks. He was charged up and excited as he violently beat them, explaining that they were the scum of the river. My father sent me out to collect him. So finding my voice, I tell him, Dad wants you. Seeing me, he dropped his killing spree and grabbed me, pulling me behind him, searching for a hiding place. I had no idea what was about to happen to me. There beneath the hollow walls of a eroded riverbank, I looked at the fallen grass that made it the perfect hidden cave. My head hit the ground hard. As I looked up, shocked and frozen in horror, I complied. I had no voice to speak as he proceeded to assault me. Suddenly, seeing a shadow of my father above me, he called out our names as my brother's filthy, blood-covered hand, reeking of dead fish, covered my mouth and my nose with one hand. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. He was so strong. I just remember his strength and the smell of the fish and the look in his eyes. As I made my way to the house, afterwards collecting myself, shuffling my clothes around, feeling guilty as though I'd done something wrong. I'd failed. And there he sat at the kitchen table with his Bible in one hand and the belt in the other. He rebuked me in Jesus' name and then spanked me as I ran to the bathroom and cried. I was just 7 years old. Let's just take a moment to collect ourselves. It's harsh to hear those things, and you may be very triggered by your own feelings of a time when you were vulnerable. I snapped myself free from the memory and sat up feeling shocked, but also relieved, because instantly it started to trigger something. I understand my life so deeply, why I felt so afraid of learning about his crimes. I behaved like a victim because I was one of his victims. This debilitating fear changed my life, caused me to isolate, gain weight, hide away. Fear ruled my life for 25 years. For the first time, I understood myself and saw that broken little girl and was so angry for her. Angry that all the most important men in my life had let me down, and those I trusted in to nurture me and protect me were the ones causing me the most harm. Since then, I recalled so many times where he tried to asphyxiate me. The last time I was 14, I reached for my dog's leash and headed out as the sky became darker. The air was cool and I was taken back my life. In that moment, I was going to go for a walk outside in the dark with my dog, and I wasn't going to be afraid. I looked up a short while later and saw a street sign that said hope. There was hope. I was on autopilot as I thought about those early days of his trial and arrest, searching the newspapers for clues, for understanding anything that I could make sense of, not just what had happened, what he did, who he was, that monster, but what I was feeling. I was petrified. I was frozen that I was going to be next. He was coming after me. And no amount of explanation from anyone, oh, he's in prison, he can't hurt you now, that didn't register to me, because, you know, he had threatened my life. He told me he was going to kill me before he killed his first victim. Well, it wasn't his first victim, but I thought it was his first victim in North Bay. That's why I had originally called the police. It wasn't because he stole my bike. It was because I felt vulnerable and threatened. In fact, that time that he came to stay with me, he'd just been released from prison after assaulting his girlfriend. And of course, he made excuses that he was the victim in it all, because that's what narcissists do. And I believed him. But there were many nights that I locked my bedroom door at night with my children in my bed and my dog, calling my mom because I felt afraid. So there were signs. So there I was, kind of in autopilot. And I thought about those early days of his trial and arrest, and searching the newspapers for clues, for understanding anything. But everything made sense now. I cried tears of sadness and anger and relief, and still, it really touches my heart. Since then, many memories have come up for me, and I go back and forth from being so angry at the fuckery that was done to that little girl I once was, to the peace and love and gentleness, knowing I'm okay, I made it. I didn't just survive, I am thriving in my life. It's a fucking trip, I tell ya. But in order to heal from it, I had to first learn the depth of the details. Days later, Paul called me, and I sat listening, feeling numb to whatever it was he was saying because I couldn't give a fuck, and interrupted him. "Did you know there's a new documentary about you?" He said yes. He said they always do that when it comes up to the anniversary or near an anniversary of one of his crimes. Very casual. I said, "Is it true that you raped a 14-year-old little girl?" He said yes. No emotions. I said, "Let me ask you this. While I watched, I had a repressed memory of the riverbank." He instantly interrupted me, saying the calls are recorded, that yes, he remembered, and began to make me feel guilty about my own emotions because he had been abused. He'd been raped, and he went on to the trauma of the prison and how he's endured the system in there. But not once did he say, "I'm so sorry for that. I'm sorry I hurt you. I can't take it back. I wish I could. What do you need me to do right now?" Not that he could do anything, because you can't come back for that. I can't come back from that. My eyes are open. You can't unknow something once you know something. And for me, he was the one person in my life that I thought protected me, that was there for me. And sure, we had fights, and I was often afraid of him, but never to that. I mean, I would stand up to him. I would fist fight him. I was not afraid of him. But looking back now, I should have been more afraid, because I didn't know that he'd murdered and raped people. Even back in my young teenage years, he was doing this. Oh, it's heavy. It's really, really heavy. Typical behavior of a narcissist, right? Abuser with a personality disorder. People who are in abusive relationships have a habit of minimizing the bad behavior of their abusers, like I did. They rationalize and justify the other person's behavior, and it allows them to tolerate the unacceptable. So for me, I truly believed that he was a victim of his childhood. "You can only kick a dog so many times," I used to say, "before it bites you." And I used to feel like that's what happened to him, because my dad was so abusive, all in the name of God, not just to him, but to all of us. You know, it wasn't just mean words. It wasn't just a belt. It was, you know, the psychology behind abusing someone in the name of God, in a religious forum. The abuser wants to keep on abusing, and they don't want to deal with any upset feelings on the part of their victim. So they normalize their unacceptable behavior until the victim thinks that it's just the way things are and the way things have to be. The abuser will blame the victim, telling them they did something to deserve the mistreatment they received. Of course, this is completely false. There's nothing that a child could ever do that would justify their behavior of being abused, or sexual abuse for that matter. Holy shit. If a child misbehaves, even if they misbehave really badly, they deserve an appropriate consequence, never abuse. Sometimes the abuser makes their victim feel guilty and ashamed for having their perfectly appropriate reactions to the abuser's bad behavior. The child is convinced by the devious, manipulative abuser that they're the ones causing the pain. After all, this is bullying and crazy making. The victim is no longer able to mount an appropriate defense against the abuse, so they tolerate it. Eventually, the abuser convinces their victim that this is the way normal relationships operate, or at least it's the best that their victim can ever hope for. Again, these ideas are all false. Abuse is never a part of a normal relationship. Love, true love, whether it's a friendship, a family dynamic, regardless of the form of love, love builds you up. It never tears down. You are better for having been loved by someone, even in the dark moments. This was a few years ago now, so I've had a bit of time to process my emotions, and as you can tell, I've had some emotions during this podcast. I've also been gentle with myself as I walk through this self-awareness and allow myself to heal, to let go of the cellular pain and the past trauma and the guilt that no longer are mine to carry, to keep hidden, or to keep a secret. Part of the problem is many keep silenced out of fear and worry that others may think, especially when it comes to their abuser, that they're still in harm's way. After all, whose secrets are we keeping in the silence of the struggles? Into letting go enough to move forward. It's really hard to imagine that going through those things, especially at the hands of a family member, it's really hard to face after that. If you or someone you know have been affected by sexual abuse, especially at the hands of my brother, or childhood trauma, please know there's hope. Come forward, speak up. Don't let it take you down. You are safe. You are loved, and you're worthy of so much more than this moment. And it does get better. Don't stay silent. Find someone to talk to. Journal. Write letters to them. Burn them if you need to. Mail them if you can. Meditate. But above all, know that you're not alone. You've been listening to Chronicles of a Medium. I'm your host, Maureen Hashi, psychic medium, intuitive healer. I look forward to our next time. Until then, the light in me honors the light in you.